This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson, visiting WUSF Public Radio in Tampa, Florida.
Spider-Man does whatever a spider can.
Spider-Man has long been one of Marvel's most popular characters. Besides comic books, Spidey has also appeared in cartoons.
Now tell me exactly what happened.
Spider-Man!
Enough!
In video games.
You really want to help? Head to Times Square. Sounds like his guys are trying to keep my backup from reaching the scene.
You got it. Almost there.
And in movies.
I want a life of my own. You've been given a gift, Peter. With great power comes great responsibility.
A lot of movies.
You want me to come down there so you can kill me?
Yes!
I'll be right there.
There's no place like home.
Many, many movies.
You're the Spiderling. Crime-fighting spider. You're Spider-Boy?
Spider-Man.
Not in that onesie, you're not.
So many movies that for a lot of people, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse prompted a universal sigh. Do we really need another Spider-Man? But Miles Morales is not just another Spider-Man, and Into the Spider-Verse isn't just another Spider-Man movie.
Miles!
Yeah!
Are you finished packing for school?
Yeah.
Early critical reviews of Spider-Verse were so strong that it debuted with a perfect score on the site Rotten Tomatoes, 100% fresh. It's already won Best Animated Feature at the Golden Globes and the BAFTAs, that's Britain's equivalent of the Oscars, and it's nominated for that Oscar, too. Disney and Pixar usually dominate that category, but now they have a serious competitor from Sony Pictures. What is it about this film that thrilled critics and audiences? And what did it take to get it made? Joining us from NPR West near Los Angeles are three members of the Spider-Verse production team. Phil Lord co-wrote the screenplay and Christopher Miller co-produced the movie. Their other films include 21 Jump Street and 22 Jump Street, The Lego Movie, and The Lego Movie 2, the second part. Phil, Chris, welcome to 1A.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
Also joining us is the film's co-director, Peter Ramsey. His other films include Rise of the Guardians in 2012, and he is the first African-American to be nominated for an Oscar in feature animation. Peter, welcome.
Hey, thank you.
Chris, let me start with you as co-writer and co-director, and also, co-producer, what does it mean to be a co-producer of an animated film like this? What's your role?
Well, I started with Phil and I were approached by Amy Pascal and Avi Arad about 4 years ago about, hey, would you want to do an animated Spider-Man movie?
From Sony Pictures.
From Sony Pictures, yes. And we thought about it, and we thought two things. One was there have been a lot of Spider-Man movies, as you said, so we have to figure out a way to make it more interesting and exciting and different from all the other ones. And the idea of being able to do a movie about Miles Morales was really exciting to us. That was a comic that we were familiar with, that was really popular and was a really cool character and a really fresh way into what was universal about Spider-Man. And then the other thing was the opportunity to make a movie that pushed the boundaries of animation and was able to feel like you were walking into a three-dimensional comic book and every frame being a painting. That seemed like a really exciting opportunity. So we jumped in there. Phil started working on a script, and then we brought in directors, and we all worked on it together. It was very, very collaborative. The movie's about collaboration, and this was a process where we all... It was such an ambitious movie with so many parts moving at the same time that it needed all of us sort of running around to get it done.
Phil, talk a bit more about your role, particularly with regard to the fact that the story does not follow the main Peter Parker, the Peter Parker we're used to. It follows around this multiracial middle school kid named Miles Morales. Why was that important?
Well, we got really inspired by what Brian Bendis and Sara Pichelli did when they created Miles in the comic books. And here's this kid who embodies the spirit of what Stan Lee and Steve Ditko made, but in a more contemporary way. He's in a bilingual household. That's the kind of household I grew up in. He's got two alive parents, which is amazing for a superhero. And to see this family that are together, that are in it together, try to figure out how to support this young man, and to watch this young man figure out how to piece together the different voices of the mentors in his life and synthesize it into one thing and figure out how he can be his best self. That seemed like a really worthy thing to make a movie about. And a lot of really interesting questions to answer.
Peter Ramsey, with regards to your role in the film, before you were a director, you were an illustrator, a storyboard artist. How do those translate into directing an animated film?
Well, you know, when you're a storyboard artist working on movies, you're kind of the director's second pair of eyes and second brain a lot of the time. And you're really working on the visual logic of the movie, how it's shot. You're thinking in very practical terms about what you're going to need in the editing room, what shots you need, how they flow into one another. You're kind of doing that on paper, or these days, I guess, you know, digitally on a computer. So it really is a kind of like pre-directing or pre-visualizing that you're doing. And in the craft of animation, you actually end up cutting storyboards together into your first look at the movie. So, you know, we take our boards and we add sound and music and time them and pace them, and you really get to do different iterations of the movie over time, building up to when you're actually ready to commit to a version that you want to animate. So it's a skill that kind of translates naturally.
Yeah, and I want to talk about how you use that skill to make this movie so original. George tweeted, "While they are entertaining, I'm kind of getting burned out on all the Marvel iterations. I feel like I'm being milked, especially with all the return-to-life situations that get me back in the theater." I want to talk about how you kept this story original as we continue with Phil Lord, Christopher Miller, and Peter Ramsey of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. This is a track from the soundtrack to the movie called Sunflower by Post Malone. You heard a little bit of Miles Morales singing that in the beginning of the show. I'm Joshua Johnson, glad to be with you. You're swinging along with 1A from WAMU and NPR. And I'm not trying to lose. Then you're left in the dust. Unless I stuck by you. You're a sunflower. I think your love would be too much. Or you'd be left in...
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Rothy's. Rothy's is the everyday flat for life on the go that comes in four fashionable styles for women: the flat, the point, the loafer, and the sneaker. Fun designs and patterns while still looking polished and professional, with new colors launched every few weeks. Best of all, Rothy's are made from recycled plastic water bottles and completely machine washable, so you can feel good about wearing them. Go to Rothy's.com and enter code 1A to get your flats and free shipping.
The U.S. and Iran have been at odds for a long time, and we tend to think it all started with the Iranian Revolution in 1979. But that's not the whole story.
We'll take you back to 4 days in 1953 that changed the U.S.-Iran relationship forever.
Throughline, the podcast where we go back in time
to understand the present.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Tampa, Florida. We're discussing Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Here is what two of you left in our inbox.
This is Casey, and this is my son,
Reese.
We're calling about the Spider-Verse movie. We got to see it a couple weeks ago. It was awesome. We were happy from start to finish. Our favorite part of the movie is when Miles can't remember the words of Sunflower, and he sounds like this. Anyway, it made us very happy, and thanks for doing a piece on Spider-Verse. It really was one of those beautiful movies I've seen in a long, long time.
And there were quite a few of you who thought this movie was indeed a blockbuster, and some of you who were quite impressed, even though you didn't expect to be. Matt tweeted, "The movie was amazing. It was funny, had a good story, amazing visuals, and so much heart. It also did something important. It brought something new and original to the movies, even though it was another Spider-Man movie." And Daniel tweeted, "I almost didn't see Into the Spider-Verse because of its lower frame style. Once I adjusted to the pace, I thought it was brilliant. It was like seeing a comic book literally come to life. What was the thought process that led to that choice compared to smoother animation?" Peter, I wonder if you could respond to that last one. But before you do, for those of you listening who have not seen Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse yet, but you want to, I cannot promise that there will not be any spoilers ahead. So, if you haven't seen the movie yet, but you want to, you might want to listen to this conversation later. With that in mind, Peter, what about the visuals of the film? How did you settle on that style?
Well, you know, we all, as you kind of mentioned earlier, there have been so many, you know, really good iterations of this character on screen that we knew we had to do something really different. And we wanted to be really different from other animated films because there are a lot of beautiful, you know, perfectly made animated films out in the marketplace right now. We're kind of in a golden age. So one thing that we had in our kind of trick bag was the idea that this movie is based on a comic book. So for the first time, let's really kind of like lean into that and kind of explore visually what it feels like to read a comic book. And, you know, there's three of us directors on the movie, myself, Bob Persichetti, and Rodney Rothman. And I think Bob, who has the most animation training out of all of us, hit on the idea that we would do a different frame rate. We would animate this movie on twos, which is how classic hand-drawn animation has always been done. And what that gives you is the poses last for two frames during 1 second instead of one, as you see with most CG animation, which gives you this beautiful, fluid, lifelike, photorealistic style. But when you do it on twos, your poses are stronger and they stick a little longer in your mind. You get a little closer to the graphic, kind of punchy feel we were hoping would make you feel as if you were reading a comic book and going one panel at a time with the artist drawing exactly what he wanted you to see. So that plus a lot of other things that you usually see in CG movies but you don't in ours, like motion blur, which a computer creates to simulate, you know, blurry motion. We don't have that. We came up with other graphic tricks to simulate that without having the computer fill every single detail in with you to create the idea that, you know, every film of this frame should feel or look like it's touched by the human hand. And in fact, it is. Our animators actually drew emotion lines on the characters' faces, you know, a lot like what you see done with ink in comic books, to give you that extra little bit of humanity and warmth that we were looking for.
With regards to the human hands involved, Christopher, I can only imagine how many worked on this film. How big was the team that put this movie together?
There are 800 artists and filmmakers that worked on this film, and each one was excited to try and push the boundaries and break new ground. And the attitude was, let's instead of this is the way it's always done, let's say, wouldn't it be cool if, and do the thing that you always have wanted to do. And so in every department, everyone was pushing the boundaries. There are 150 animators on this, which I believe is a record.
More.
Yeah, it's like 180.
180, that's right, 180.
Which is like a record by a
mile. When we did the Lego movie, we had 50 animators on that and went up to 60 for a few weeks. But it was such a complicated process that was both CG and hand-drawn animation, as Peter was saying, that normally an animator can do about 4 seconds of work in a week. An animator could do 1 second of work a week for this movie.
The detail in this animation and certainly moved a lot of our listeners, including some who have a different kind of an eye for art and design. I mean, I only see it as a fan of animation, but we heard from one artist in the Midwest who left this in our inbox.
My name is August, and I'm calling from Grand Rapids. I go to Kendall College of Art and Design. And when I saw Spider-Verse come out for the first time, when I first saw the previews, I was mind blown. I couldn't believe the art styles combined. I couldn't believe the type of animation. I had never seen it before. And my life revolves around pop culture things like animation. When I saw it, I immediately wanted to switch my major over. And I'm really excited for what this will bring to the world of animation. Because it's focused not on the frame-by-frame, back-breaking, eye-straining, and hand-cramping traditional methods. It's focused on something new that's built around fluidity and dynamics.
Wow, August, thank you so much for sharing that story with us. And Phil, I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit on what Chris was saying in terms of the size of the team. Can you give us some examples of of why it takes 800 people to draw a movie like Spider-Man? Like, what are some of the discrete things that they're working on that, you know, me, John Q. moviegoer, might not necessarily think of?
Well, we wanted the whole thing to feel like a moving illustration. And that meant that we couldn't use anything synthetic. We had to, because we're masochists, we wanted to re-engineer everything. So that means starting at the software level, people have to rewrite all of the code. And then we wanted to have all the shadows have line work in them or Benday dots, which is easy enough to do on a still frame, but to watch it move is really challenging. So that meant
I'm sorry, but Benday dots?
Benday dots are like what you see in a comic book panel. It's the dot patterns that Lichtenstein made famous.
Oh, that paintings. Kind of pop art look.
That's right.
Gotcha.
And it's a printing technique. And we basically tried to use as many printing techniques, you know, reference as many printing techniques, including offsetting the color from, the way a mistake might do in an older comic book. So we're using all of these techniques that have never been used in motion before. And that means that somebody, frame by frame, a lighting artist that normally is setting lights and troubleshooting, is now like having to figure out how much the dot pattern should travel with the character as it moves. And essentially every shot is a handmade shot.
So I just want to be clear. You're saying that what you were trying to do was kind of so outside the box, there wasn't even software that existed to do it until you had it written.
That's right. I mean, that's the dream that we always have when we go into one of these movies is how do we shape the technology to the art instead of the art to the technology?
Christine emailed, when making Spider-Verse, were all the other characters besides Miles Morales a part of the initial brainstorming, or did they all come later on in the process? Phil, why don't you take that question? What about Miles Morales?
Miles was the center always in his family. And then pretty quickly, Chris and I talked about how to make it feel like a must-see theatrical proposition. And the idea that somehow Miles would cross paths with Peter and that we would find Peter Parker in a different stage of life seemed like a good addition to the movie. And then in order to do that, we had to open a hole in the multiverse. And then all these other characters started trickling through until we had this character set that we have now, which is more or less what was on the page.
Here is an example of one of the other Spider-Men that we meet in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
My name is Peter B. Parker. For the last 22 years, I thought I was the one and only Spider-Man. I'm pretty sure you know the rest. You see, I saved the city, fell in love, saved the city some more, maybe too much. Then like 15 years passed, blah, blah, blah. I buried Aunt May, my wife and I split up, but I handled it like a champion.
That's Peter B. Parker from Into the Spider-Verse. Chris, this one's kind of a wreck. At one point, Miles refers to him as the janky old broke hobo Spider-Man. There's got to be a little bit of concern or a little bit of care that's got to be taken when you're playing with an origin story that is so beloved and so well known. I mean, Spider-Man was kind of Marvel's very first breakout hit character.
And I think that this... a movie, it's very evident that it's all done with a great deal of love and respect for Spider-Man and the history of Spider-Man. What was interesting to us was the idea of seeing him, Peter Parker, at 40, where things haven't gone his way entirely. And the Spider-Man that we grew up with as a teenager, when we were teenagers, and now being our age and in not in the best of shape. So it seemed like a really... cool opportunity to have a Mr. Miyagi to Miles's Daniel, who really wasn't doing as great as Mr. Miyagi is doing.
Yeah, life was real bad to Peter B. Parker.
Yes, but what's fun about the movie is that his mentoring of Miles reignites his passion for being Spider-Man and allows him to go back to being the hero that he once was.
Lori tweeted, "I really enjoyed the utter creativity of Into the Spider-Verse, and as a non-comic reading older adult, I've given up on most live-action comic movies other than Black Panther and Wonder Woman. However, are recent animated features getting too meta? We loved Spider-Verse, Ralph Wrecks the Internet, and Lego Part 2, but noticed, especially in the Lego Movie 2, adults were laughing at the many meta aspects, but kids in the audience were surprisingly quiet." Phil, what about that? You worked, obviously, on Lego Movie 1 and 2. How do you write for kids and adults?
I mean, we really just write for ourselves and let it work itself out. I mean, we tend to have a pretty juvenile sensibility, so I think we hit right over the plate for kids as well. And our movies tend to be buoyant and optimistic. So I think that they're welcoming. You know, we try to make the movie, even when bad things are happening, we want the movie to seem kind, that it's not going to hurt you, that the movie's going to be good for you.
That was something I think that came out a lot with, I have yet to see Lego Movie 2, but definitely with Lego Movie, that it was so kind of self-referentially funny in a way that was just insane, plus the eye-popping animation. But by the end of the movie, it was clear that it wasn't just a gimmick. Like, the way the movie resolves and that scene with Will Ferrell's character and his son was just, I mean, it was beautiful. It was moving, and it kind of, it made the movie not feel like a gimmick. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, we work really hard to do that, and Lego Movie 2 is similar in that it's, you know, ultimately embarrassingly sincere, and we approach all the movies that way.
Embarrassingly
sincere.
I want you to. We have to pause, but I want you to define what you mean by embarrassingly.
Well, it's like
sincere.
we make comedies, you know, and we're comedy writers. That's why we started.
Oh, I'm sorry. We have to pause. I'm going to let you finish your comment on the other side of this break. We're speaking to Christopher Miller, Phil Lord, and Peter Ramsey of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I'll let you finish your comment in just a moment. As we go to break, here's another song from a different Lord Miller project. This is Catchy Song by Dylan Francis, T-Pain, and That Girl Lele from the Lego Movie 2, the second part. More of your questions and thoughts in a moment. Stay close.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from LegalZoom. If you want to make 2019 the year you finally start a business or secure your family's future, LegalZoom can help. With their network of independent attorneys licensed in all 50 states, LegalZoom can help you navigate your legal needs, from wills and trusts to LLCs, trademarks, contract reviews, and more. And the best part is, LegalZoom is not a law firm, so they don't charge by the hour. More at LegalZoom.com/NPR.
Hey, it's Peter Sagal. On Wait, Wait, Stacey Abrams gave us the secret to avoiding the curse of the State of the Union response.
I drank a lot of water early.
Yeah.
And I prayed really hard.
Stay hydrated for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Back now to our conversation with Peter Ramsey, Phil Lord, and Christopher Miller, part of the massive team behind Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. We'll get to some more of your questions in a moment, but Chris, let me let you finish your thought.
Yeah, Phil was saying that we are embarrassingly sincere, and I think what he's talking about is how we want to, at some point, as a comedy writer, you always want to be kind of distant and cynical and cheeky, but when you're watching a movie, you really feel like you need to relate to characters and feel emotional resonance, and if we can make an audience really, really connect to something so much so that they want to cry, we feel like that is doing our job making movie, and it's hard for people who just want to be cool and cheeky. But
I think also our tragic flaw is we're optimists.
It is true.
At the end of the day.
How is that a tragic flaw?
It's
and
like,
by the way,
you know,
if you would just remind me which of you is speaking, you all sound equally
Phil.
Brilliant to me from here.
Yes.
So, Phil, yes.
Yeah, we just sound, oh, we all sound equally brilliant.
You do, really, clearly.
Yeah, this is Phil. I'm the one who has a horrible head cold. But the we just, you know, we're cynical comedy writers on some level. But at the end of the day, we really believe in people and we think they're good, essentially good. And just barely, I think. Like 51%.
They just have a little bit of essential goodness in there.
A little bit.
To get us by.
Yes, yeah. And I think all of us, when we are so encouraged, can be our best selves. And ultimately, that's what we wanted to make Spider-Man about. You know, we wanted people to be called to, you know, be the best people they can be.
Peter, I think that speaks into a little bit of what you said after Into the Spider-Verse won the Golden Globe for Best Animated Feature. Here is a bit of what you told reporters after the awards ceremony.
We all felt deeply the idea that anyone can have this kind of experience. Anyone can share in this myth and this kind of legend, be this kind of hero, want these kind of things. And the story of Miles Morales was a way to crystallize all those feelings into one character. This, you know, African-American Puerto Rican kid from Brooklyn. We all started with a fantastic vision that Phil Lord laid out in it from his very first treatment. Really, a vision of what this movie could be was there. And I think that's what made us all sign on and want to give our all to the idea. Anyone can wear the mask. Everyone is powerful. Everyone's necessary. We're all counting on you.
Peter Ramsey, I'd love for you to riff on that a little bit further, particularly the Miles Morales aspect of it, and also the fact that you are the first African-American nominated for the Oscar for Best Animated Feature. There's got to be kind of a lot baked into that for you.
Yeah, I mean, baked in is kind of the word for this one because there's so much that was organic to the story as Brian Michael Bendis and Sara Pichelli created this character of Miles. They were very sensitive and very, I think, kind of straightforward in the way they depicted Miles' life and his everyday life in Brooklyn with his parents and the realities of, you know, what it would be for a kid like that to embark on something kind of special and new. And, you know, my experience as a black person kind of relating to that character is sort of like, well, of course, you know, for me and, you know, so many people in this country, in this world, everyday life is like meeting people who have, you know, dual heritage or that they're, yeah, your dad's from Baltimore and your mom's from New Orleans, like my parents, or, you know, your parents are from the Caribbean, but you grew up in the Bronx. Or so you've got that idea that humanity comes in just more than one thin slice of, you know, whatever it is just everyday life for, I think, just probably just about everybody in this country. But culturally, we've been sort of, there's this weird kind of mass consensus that things can be broken down into easy categories, and that's the way it should be. One thing I love about our movie is how it takes a kind of diversity and specificity of people as a given. You know, we just say, oh, this is the world. This is life. If we can just show it the way it actually is and kind of be open and welcoming, like Phil was saying, and, you know, realize that that's the normal condition of humanity and we should embrace it, that none of this has to feel like it's grafted onto a story and it just makes everyone feel like they're actually seeing a piece of real life.
We got a listener who left a note through our app, 1A Vox Pop, who's right here in the listening area of WUSF in the Tampa Bay area. Here's what she had to say.
My name is Dawn, and I live in Tampa, Florida. I first heard about the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse movie from a friend of mine who is Trinidadian and Dominican. He said that he grew up absolutely loving Spider-Man and was more than excited to see a Spider-Man that reflected him. Miles Morales really represents a whole new generation of comic book lovers and a whole old generation of comic book lovers that were never acknowledged or had a place to feel like they belonged in that universe. So that, in addition to the fact that I have a young African-American son, I am more than excited about the diversity and culture represented in this film.
Yeah, Dawn, I hear you on that. Thanks very much for sharing your thoughts with us. Phil, I'd love for you to chime in on this, particularly because there's been this conversation. We've had it on our show, too, about diversity in Hollywood, and it seems like Hollywood is beginning to put more diverse characters on the screen. We're also seeing that with comic books, not just the success of Black Panther, Miles Morales as Spider-Man. You've got Kamala Khan as Ms. Marvel. Jane Foster briefly took over as Thor, so Thor, for a time, was female. You know, you've got all this kind of like an upending of the model for the way these stories have been told historically. What do you see is behind that? Is that Hollywood coming around to diversity? Is it just about the bottom line? How do you see it?
I mean, I couldn't tell you what's affecting everybody else. I could say that it pays dividends socially and creatively. I think when we set out to do it, in part we were just going, golly, how do we do something new here? And how do we make this story relevant? And how do we make it a mission for us? You know, we spent 4 years on this movie. There were dark days. On those dark days, you want to have something to fall back on that makes you feel like it's worth it. And this is ridiculous, but in the treatment that I wrote, I put a mission statement on the front.
You mean like the short summary of the movie to pitch it?
Exactly, before we went to script. And I wrote that we wanted to make a movie that made young people feel powerful and that invited grown-ups to help those young people figure out their power. And ultimately, that's the bottom line of why we wanted to make the movie. So Miles is a dimension of that. The fact that he's, you know, an African-American Puerto Rican kid who speaks Spanish in his home is, at 4 years ago, it felt like, oh, this is going to surprise people. You know, this is before, you know, Black Panther was in production. So we felt like it's going to get people pumped up. You know, there was that whole episode with Donald Glover and a groundswell to get him cast as Spider-Man before this whole thing started.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So we knew that culturally this would be an important moment, and we felt like if we could make a movie that was worthy of Miles and his family, then it would have been a good thing. And the other thing is that once we opened that box, the movie just like got so much better. Like the everything that it pays dividends creatively. It's not just a social justice warrior stuff. It's really about like representing, as Peter says, the world as it is. And then suddenly the movie becomes a better representation of New York. It's a better, there's more interesting stuff going on among the characters.
Right.
We were all invited to represent the way things look and feel more honestly. And that inspired all of the artists.
We're a bit low on time, but Phil, I'd love to know what's next for you guys. Now that Lego Movie 2 is out, Into the Spider-Verse is out, both doing well. What's next before we go?
A nap. Chris and I are
wiped
out.
Man, I can relate to your life, yes.
Yes, you can. Gosh, you know, we're doing a little bit more press, and then we have essentially a blank slate in front of us, which we haven't had for a long time.
We're developing a few movies, live-action movies and the like, but mostly we're going to take a little bit of a break.
There it is. A vague and coy answer.
It's a good answer. Sometimes having just break time is a good thing. Phil Lord, Christopher Miller, and Peter Ramsey all worked on the Golden Globe winner and Academy Award nominee, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Phil, Chris, Peter, it was a phenomenal movie and a great conversation. Thank you all three of you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Today's show was produced by Paige Osborne. To learn more about her and the rest of our team, visit the1a.org/staff. And thanks also to the team here at WUSF Public Media in Tampa, St. Petersburg for hosting us the last few days. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.